I'm on with Dan Pink, New York Times bestselling author of Drive and A Whole New Mind. Welcome, Dan.
Hey, good to be with you, Tim.
So we're going to talk some about authors, how they get into speaking and about their online platform as well. And I just kind of want to start there. You know, you do a lot of speaking around your books and around the topics you write on. And a lot of authors are kind of looking to do that as part of their career as well. So when somebody comes to you and says they're looking to get into speaking and grow the speaking side of their business, what kind of advice do you give them?
Wow. You know what? At some level, I mean, you know, I actually, for me at least, I think writing is so at the center of everything. And I think the real key here is for anybody is to get the writing down. And for me at least, writing is at the center of everything that I do. And anything that happens to come out of that is kind of a bonus. So I would concentrate, I mean, as counterintuitive as it sounds, I would concentrate on putting out great stuff, just putting out great stuff. And coming up with a basket of ideas that is useful to other people and that you hope is associated with you. And then once you have done that, it's worth reaching out to – there are a lot of speakers bureaus out there. Reach out to the speakers bureau and a speakers bureau and team up with somebody there. There are a lot of people who I think – I consider myself a writer. It's so much at the heart of everything that I do. And again, maybe I'm just validating my own path, but I think that's really the best approach is that the other stuff can happen on its own if you get the writing right.
Well, but you've said before that, you know, one of the ways you've sold so many books is just getting out there, putting your face out there.
Yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it. And so, I mean, I think that when a book is out, one needs to be out everywhere, anywhere. And, you know, I'm a little bit insane in this regard, but from the very first book that I wrote, I think that there is a great value in going out and talking about it, not necessarily for money, but talking about it as a way to spread your ideas. And there are all kinds of things that you can do. I mean, in any kind of local community, there are all of these groups meeting at night. There are all of these kinds of conferences that might be in your area. And they're always looking for good ideas and good content. And that can be a really great way over time to get your message out. The other thing is I think that what I do some of is I offer I'll give you a more concrete example here, Tim. When I wrote my first book, Free Agent Nation, in the paperback edition of the book, I said that if you have a book club of more than two people that's reading this book, and you are within a 50-mile radius of Washington, D.C., where I live, I will come to your book club. And people took me up on the offer. At the same time, I said, and if you're further, you know, outside of that radius, then I will do my very best to try to do your book club by phone. And I've done a lot of those as well. And so I just think that there is a return to doggedness, and there's a return to just being out there a lot, it can be daunting at times, but on the other level, if you really believe in what you're saying, it's just a natural part of the process.
So it sounds like especially when you're getting started, there's kind of nothing too small to getting your face in front of your fans.
Amen.
Okay. And because
I think that in some level, you know, even if you're somewhat established, I just think that that kind of direct connection with people who care about what you have to say is so profoundly valuable on so many different levels. It's valuable from a commercial perspective. It's valuable in terms of giving you feedback on your ideas and sharpening your points. It's valuable in a human way, Tim, because you know, you can become re-energized by that. Like the idea that, I mean, for writers, you know, I think a lot of non-writers don't realize how solitary being a writer can be. You're stuck in your own little, you're stuck in a little office and you're typing stuff into your computer and then you throw it out into the world. And it's kind of glorious and affirming that anybody actually reads it. So, you know, and so if you do, and so it's valuable on a commercial level, it's valuable at a, it's valuable in terms of sharpening your ideas, and it's valuable, I think, at a, you know, kind of a psychological, even spiritual level of an affirmation that somebody actually cares about what you have to say. It's sort of like I read an interview once with Jay Leno years and years ago, and you know his view on how to become a good stand-up comic was to basically play any club that would have you early on, and I think that's actually pretty good advice.
Okay,
so even though Jay Leno is still not very funny.
Okay, so let's be very practical here. So
yeah.
I'm an author. I've signed up for a speakers bureau, but you're also now in a pool of thousands of people.
Right.
And so and I want to start speaking at conferences. Like what's the best thing? Is it literally just as like find any conference as close to your idea and start sending out emails or picking up the phone? Like what should these people do to like just get these opportunities? Because I think that's some of the disconnect, right? Is
yeah.
that they're like, okay, I want to speak. Now what? And
yeah.
so should literally just anything, just, you know, anything that you, the conference matches, just start going out and pitching or, you know, and what does that look like?
Okay. I think that, I mean, you don't do it, randomly. In some sense, it's a little bit like, you know, dating. I mean, you don't just sort of ask anybody who happens to pass by on the street. I think you ask people with whom you have some kind of natural affiliation and whose group or conference might somehow find your stuff valuable. So I think the key, though, is really to look at it from the conference organizer's perspective and say, not, you know, no one really cares that you want to do this, but what they do care is that you can make their life easier by giving their audience something valuable. And so I couch it very much in terms of the value that you can provide to their audience. And then I would just, you know, reach out in like any kind of business, maybe get a one-off connection, a friend of a friend, and say, listen, I've got this new, you know, let's say there's a small conference or a small gathering going on in a particular weekday evening where you are. And you go to one of the organizers and say, hey, my name is Joe Schmatz and I'm a friend of Maria Lopez. And, I've got this new book out or this new article out or whatever. And I think it'd be useful and valuable to your audience. And if you have any time on in your conference or in one of your gatherings, I'd love to come and, you know, talk about these ideas for a little bit and answer some questions. And like dating, you have to be prepared to get a no. But I think if you couch it in terms of, the other, you know, the organizers, needs, I think you can, you know, get a start.
And so is that what you would do if you were starting all over? You just wrote Free Agent Nation again. Would you basically do the exact same thing again?
Yeah. I mean, I hate to say it so unequivocally. I probably should have pondered it more, but yeah. I mean, I think that there is this notion out there that, and this is what I always say, Tim, to people who have a book out, is that there's this idea out there that this is, that sort of spreading the ideas in a book is about kind of like a, you know, like running for president and you're, you know, and you have to fly all over the country and put up big TV ads and whatnot. And in some ways that's true, except that it's the New Hampshire primary. It's not a national election. You got to go there and talk to the, you know, go to the flapjack breakfast for the Manchester County Firehouse and, you know what I mean? And do those kinds of things and give people something valuable. And spend the time. It's a lot. I mean, you know, I think a reason why so relatively few people do it is that it's extremely time consuming and it can be difficult. It's arduous. But I think that's the payoff. And the great thing now, I mean, it's really kind of remarkable when I think about Free Agent Nation, which came out, you know, 10 plus years ago. How much more, you know, doing that face-to-face stuff is fantastic. I think it is a great way to get your ideas out. I think that a lot of times authors discount how valuable the kind of feedback they get from readers is to them. So I think you learn a lot. I think you get a lot done. It built on itself. So you got to go out there. You got to, you know, talk to anybody who'll listen. And if you're good and you're providing stuff of value, the word will spread. But anyway, back to this idea of 10 years ago, there are other things too, obviously, you know, besides shoe leather. I mean, you got Twitter, you got Facebook, you got all of these things that can help you, you know, do a little bit better. I think the key really is that I think people mistake is that you have to give something. You have to provide something of value to other people. The fact that you have something to sell is far less important to the folks on the other end of the phone call or email, then, you know, that you can do something to make their lives easier.
Well, you know, you mentioned the Twitter and Facebook and that kind of thing, and you have a blog, and it gets a lot of people reading it. And so, you know, when did you start that, and why did you start it? And then, of course, you know, stuff changes over time. So how do you see that playing into what you do nowadays?
Yeah, it's interesting. I actually, long ago, back when every newspaper account of blogs called it a weblog. It's like so-and-so runs a weblog, also known as a blog. I did a blog for a year called Just One Thing, where each day I did just one thing in a blog, just because I was curious about blogging. It was just started out. I wanted to see what it was like. And I ended up doing it for a year and not doing it any longer. And the reason for that was that it, you know, ended up being, even just putting up one thing a day ended up being time consuming, and I had other things to do. Now, I ended up rejuvenating that a couple of years later. Largely, I think the main reason was that it's to give myself an outlet for other stuff that didn't quite maybe pass muster as an article or certainly as a book, smaller stuff. And it also represented another form of engagement. So people will leave comments, people send me emails based on what I have, and you can begin to have that kind of conversation with people, that it isn't a, I mean, the big, big change, particularly from 15 years ago, is that it is not, I mean, this is so obvious. I mean, it's not one way, it's a conversation. And the more you're willing to participate in this conversation, the better. The trouble is that, you know, conversations take time. And sometimes conversations aren't all, you know, milk and honey.
Yeah, so looking at your blog now, you know, what do you think it plays a role in far as just straight, you know, book sales? Do you think it has an impact on your book sales? Do you think, you know, why do you blog now? You know, what does that look like in your overall, you know, what you're doing to sell books and to do speaking and all of that?
You know what? I have to say, I mean, I'm sort of embarrassed. I'm wondering whether I'm even, like, what I'm about to say is even good advice, but it's just what I do. I don't really think about it. I'm embarrassed to say I don't think about it that strategically. You know, I do the stuff that I blog about. I look at as ways to, again, communicate with people, and I think that probably has some incremental effect on selling a few more books. I think that having a presence online is important, because let's say somebody hears a radio interview or their mother-in-law goes to a conference and hears, say, there's this dude, he had this funny name, and they Google it, and so there's a place for people to find. But I really think that it's really continuing the conversation, and I think that that has long-term benefits, although you're not going to see much in the way of short-term benefits, I think, on that. I just don't think that there is an immediate ginormous payoff. I just think it's more of a kind of sustained attention to the people who care about what you have to say, and continuing that conversation is really the essence of it. And also, I think, you know, at a sort of harder headed level, if somebody is curious about you today, they will ask Mr. Google, and if Mr. Google can't find you, that's a serious problem.
Well, and then you're on Twitter, and then you have an email newsletter as well that goes out.
Right.
And so how do you, you know, are you, is that kind of fall into that same bucket where it's just, you know, something, you know, Twitter especially can be something that you're just kind of doing, you know, almost for fun? Or is that kind of part of a larger strategy as well?
Again, I started out on Twitter just because it's like, I was thinking, okay, what the heck is this? What the heck is Twitter? And yeah, I tried it out.
That's everybody.
Yeah. And it's like, oh my God, this is totally cool. This is really interesting. And I really like it. And so I do it mostly for fun. And also because I do think that there is stuff that I'm interested in that I like to tell people about, in the same way that I would tell my friends if I talk to them on the phone or see them in person. And it's not anything where I necessarily have to have a long – it's not something that rises to the level of a blog post, but it's something that I find kind of interesting, and I think other people would be interested in it too. And so, for instance, today I just did a tweet from – I mean, again, it's – I did a tweet about – some interesting data that came out from Pew, the Pew Charitable Trust, that showed how much more likely college-educated people are to be married than, say, people with only a high school degree. A huge gap. I mean, something like 64% of high school of college graduates are married, but less than half, 48%, of high school graduates are married. Now, I find that absolutely fascinating. Now, I don't have, you know, maybe if I were, you know, a magazine journalist and were assigned that story and had a couple of weeks to develop it, I would have something intelligent to say about it. But I think it's pretty interesting. And so what will happen is I'll tweet that out because I think people will be interested in it. And there are people following me who say, oh, right, I've never seen that before. I'm glad I'm following this guy. He has something interesting to say, or he's pointing me to interesting directions. And then during those few times, you know, out of, you know, every 50 tweets, I can say something like, you know, hey, I've got a new paperback book coming out if you're interested. And maybe people will be marginally more, you know, likely to take that seriously than if it's this, you know, because I've had the credibility of sending them interesting things. But it really started out of curiosity, and I do it mostly for fun. I think if one were to look at the actual, you know, really scrutinize, if I were to bring in McKinsey to scrutinize the ROI on Twitter, the McKinsey people might say, you might be better off doing something else.
Okay. And so another thing that you do is put your email address on all of the books that you send out. And from what you've said, you email back everybody that emails you. And so, you know,
because I'm a glutton for punishment.
Oh, is that the only reason?
Yeah, that's the main reason. I'm a masochist.
No, I mean, or does that fall into the same vein of, you know, getting your face out there?
It's part of it. Yeah, it's sort of, I mean, I think all these things, Tim, fall into, as I think it through, all these things fall into kind of building a relationship with people who are interested in what I have to say. And people whom I'm interested in what they have to say. And so obviously all this, you know, because everything is opt-in, I'm only getting people who are interested in this. So anybody who doesn't care what I have to say is not following on Twitter, is not signing up for the email newsletter, is not looking at the blog. But there is a cohort of people out there who do those things. And I like talking to them for a whole host of reasons. And I think email is, and for me at least, has been so far the most robust example of it. So at the very mundane level, when I put an email address on my book jacket, this is going to sound like a joke, but it's not. People will email me and tell me they found typos in the book. And you know what? I'll fix those typos in the next edition. Yeah. I mean, that's awesome. You know, it's like, you know, it's just awesome. You know, you got, you know, tens of thousands of more eyes out there helping you make the book a little bit better. So I think that's really, really cool. Other times what I will see is people will ask questions. And so, and you learn a lot from the questions. So questions even like, why didn't you include X, Y, or Z? And it makes me think, why didn't I include X, Y, or Z? And sometimes because of that, those kinds of questions, I will change the paperback edition of the book. That is, I'll listen to what the people are interested in and then add some stuff or recast some stuff ever so slightly because, I never realized people were interested in that. A lot of times the email can be a very, very effective early warning sign for who your audience is or perhaps isn't. I'll give you two examples of that. With this book that I wrote a few years ago called A Whole New Mind, almost from the get-go, I mean, almost literally from day one, I started hearing from educators. And that surprised me because it's a business book and I didn't write a word about education in that entire book. But literally, I mean, I think like the second email I got was from a high school teacher in Indianapolis. And as this thing started pouring in, I said, whoa, wait a second. This is somehow, to my surprise, educators are interested in this. Wow, that's kind of cool. And so if I were to get, say, an interview request from, say, an education magazine or something like that, I would jump at the opportunity. Mm-hmm. Or if I saw somebody mention the book, say, on an education blog, I might email them and say, hey, thanks a lot for mentioning the book. If you want, I'm happy to do an interview with you. And so those emails gave me a sign of who the market was in a really, really powerful way and an early sign too. So that was really important. In another book that I wrote called The Adventures of Johnny Bunko. Now, in that book, I had my URL on the jacket rather than an explicit email. That's just a mistake. But I did hear from readers there. And what I did there is, again, that told me who my audience wasn't. And so I expected to hear from all of these career-stressed 20-somethings. That was really who the book was written for. And lo and behold, I start hearing from middle schoolers and their parents and their teachers. And we ended up having just a great, great audience for that book among a far younger group of readers than I ever expected. And again, the email that I got was one of the first indicators of that. And so it's really, really, I mean, I just think it's so useful in that regard. And then the other thing is that, people ask all kinds of great questions. And again, it sharpens your ideas. It gives you ideas for how to put things into, new things to put in. And then for the new edition of Drive, this paperback edition of Drive, I actually was much more explicit. And, you know, we welcomed people to contribute. You know, we asked three questions. You know, what's your favorite part of the book? What's most useful to you? Something like that. What do you think should be included? How are you using the book? And, you know, we got hundreds and hundreds of responses on that. And people gave some pretty good ideas. And I put the name of everybody who contributed into the acknowledgments of the paperback section just because they helped make it better. So, again, this is, you know, here's the thing that, you know, this is not rocket science here. This is not like, oh, my God, I can't believe this is the most creative, bold thinking I've ever heard of. I mean, this happens all the time in other products and services. It just doesn't happen that often in books.
But, you know, that was one of my next questions is, you know, what has changed in the book world? Because, your first book was published, a little over 10 years ago. Was that Free Agent Nation, right?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. And so, you know, the book industry has changed a lot just in the past few years with the explosion of just how many books are being published.
Yeah.
Self-published is out there now, all of the online tools. And so, and I was talking to one author yesterday, and he was talking about the difference between his first and second book and how it was just so much harder to sell a second book. Like, he's like, the first one I shipped off to the publisher, we sold a bunch of copies. The second one I shipped it off to the publisher, and then I had to go out and actually sell them myself.
Yeah, of course.
And so, you started early on with Free Agent Nation doing this kind of face-to-face stuff. But is that almost required now?
And yes.
You know, you're looking at, you just signed your fifth book. And so, you know, what are you thinking it's going to take to sell that book in a couple years?
Well, I mean, to answer your one question, I mean, is that what's required? The answer is absolutely yes. I mean, and I actually think that a lot of authors are past that notion, that kind of effete, outdated notion that if I just create my masterwork and send it out into the world, that audiences will gravitate to it because of its inherent brilliance and magnetism. I think that's just nonsense. And I don't think there's that many authors who believe that. I think there are authors out there who recognize that that's not going to work, but don't know exactly what to do. And those are folks who I think they can come up with all kinds of great ideas, and they just need a little bit of coaching. But when this next book comes out, believe me, I am going to be out there. I'm going to be talking to anybody who will talk to me. I'm going to be answering questions from readers. I'm going to be doing interviews on blogs. I'm going to be, it's the New Hampshire primary, baby. I'm going back to the firehouse and going to that flapjack breakfast.
Huh. All right. Well, so to end this out, we've kind of covered a bunch of stuff here. Is there anything that we haven't covered that, you know, a new author or somebody just trying to, you know, build their kind of following so they can sell their book when it comes out? Is there anything we haven't covered that you would want to say?
Well, no, I think we've covered a lot. I mean, what I don't want to do is give people the idea that this is really hard or really daunting or anything like that. It requires a lot of work. But that's true. What's interesting is that there is, I think it's the process of doing what you're describing here is very similar to the process of writing. There's one thing that writers know that people who aren't writers don't, is that writing is much more butt than head. That is, a big secret to writing, effective writing, writing that is useful to other people, is showing up and getting the work done. Showing up and getting the work done. There are a lot of people out there who want to have written a book, but don't actually want to put in the time, the horrible, painstaking time to do it. And it's the same thing with this stuff. That is, it's not that difficult, but you got to be willing to commit to it. And you got to be willing to commit to it for the long haul. And you got to be willing to go, just like in writing, when you go through those, you know, those days where you're just like, I got nothing. I've just written, you know, 600 words and they're crap. They're barely, you know, they're barely in English. The idea that anyone would ever pay me to write is absurd. And you know what? You got to get past those days because the next day is going to be a little bit better. And you're going to got to get through these things. Tim, I have so many of these things. So many of these things. I did a book signing in, never forget this, Henderson, Nevada. Henderson, Nevada. I went to a Barnes & Noble in Henderson, Nevada. Henderson, Nevada, you know, at the time, you know, in the Las Vegas area has sort of taken a hit in the downturn, but was one of those really kind of booming, exurban, suburban kind of places, okay? So this is a big, thriving Barnes & Noble. So it's like, oh, great, I'm going to do a book signing at Barnes & Noble and, you know, one of the fastest growing cities in America, you know? And I get there and they have, I'm thinking, oh my God, they only have 15 chairs lined up for me. Wow, that's kind of a diss. And then, you know, we started like 7 and at 6:59, there are only 3 people in those 15 chairs. And then when I start, as soon as I start talking, one of those 3 people leaves because he says, oh, I'm in the wrong place. Okay, so there I am talking to 2 people and for like 20 minutes and neither one buys a book. So I've gone to Henderson, Nevada. I have spent my time. I have had the horrid experience of showing up at like the world's biggest bookseller at the time, you know, whom would be people, you know, places that I want to establish a relationship with and say, wow, look what a draw I am. 2 people, 3 people, one of whom was in the wrong place. So we can even count that guy and no book sold. Wow, what an evening, what a triumph. And that's just, I've had so many, you know, every writer has had so many experiences like that. And that's just part of the game. Because you know what happens? If you do it enough, eventually it's not going to be 2 people, it's going to be 6 people. And you do that and it's going to be, you know, 16 people. And then it's going to be 40 people. And then those 40 people are going to tell people. And, you know, and it just takes time.
How many people came to your last book signing?
Oh, let's see. Well, I mean, when I was promoting A Whole New Mind, Drive, let's see. I mean, we did really well. I mean, again, we have, most of the events we did for the book, most of the book events we did for Drive were drawing around 300. So we did, you know, 350. So we did, you know, so, but that's, you know, that was, it's not as if I got significantly better looking and more articulate. It's, in fact, I would say both of those things went the opposite direction. But what it was is that, you know, I put in 10 years.
Yeah.
I mean, really, that's, you know, again, I don't, you know, it's, you know, I'm sorry for going on and on about this, but it's just for the folks out there who think, oh my God, you know, it's like it requires some kind of special, you know, secret sauce or some kind of special talent or anything like that. It doesn't. It requires creating great work, creating something really good that people want and need that you're proud of, and then just being relentless over many years.
All right. Well, thanks, Dan.
Hey, my pleasure.